You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And I'm on a microphone, fellas, and I'm on decent Wi-Fi. Feels good to be back.
Where are you? Are you allowed to say, or like the feds listen?
Yeah.
No, listen.
They're mad because he's flagrant. Let's go.
You know when a dude's not scared, but not because he's tough, just because he puts his faith in his fellow man and believes that everybody has his best interests at heart?
Sure.
That's me. So I am in a hotel room. I'm in a hotel next to the Grove. Tom, how familiar are you? Bob is.
Yes. The mall in the big mall, right?
Big mall. I'm next to the big mall.
Is that the mall, right?
Yeah, you got it. And it's their Disney like weird fucking mall. But more importantly, I'm about 40 yards from a Whole Foods and about 100 yards from an Erewhon, living my best life with my new wife at a totally decent hotel. By the way, stayed at the Four Points by Sheraton at the airport the other day. Don't do it, folks.
No, don't do it. Proximity to airport's not good.
Bad.
Unless you're literally there because you are catching a flight, you're suffering. You're suffering. Don't do it.
Have you come east and then went back already?
Yes, that's correct. Visited family, then came out here to put my wife on a plane. She goes back to Australia, and I will be hanging out here longer than I anticipated. Let's not jinx me, everybody, but I'm taking a fighter jet to San Diego on Thursday. So wish me luck with that. I'll be.
What is your life?
That's what Biden's money went to, Tom. That's where that budget went to. We got to get this guy from Drug Church on a fighter jet down to San Diego. Make sure he's straight.
Here's a quiz for you guys. How long does it take by fighter jet to get from Los Angeles to San Diego?
30 minutes.
20 minutes.
30 is my bet.
18 minutes.
Amazing.
For people who are not from Southern California and haven't had to make that drive.
It's 100
holy
miles.
Holy shit.
It's 100 miles. and it feels like 200.
Easy.
You hit it just right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad this is the first time in a very long time we're all on real microphones with real Wi-Fi. Thank you guys for manning the fort last week. Two quick hits before we get into our ad reads and the whole shebang. One, Tom.
Yes.
What has Patrick been getting wrong the last, let's say, 5 episodes?
The intro?
No, that's a good guess.
That is a good guess.
The episode numbering.
What are we at?
We're in the 320s, not the 330s. Mistyped 331 and have continued to do so. And I'm like, let me see. And the first couple, I was like, I forgot one time to tell you. And then another time it went. And then it was like last week, I was like, God damn it. So we are in the 320s, not the 330s.
You sometimes I'm shocked that certain bureaucracies, government bureaucracies are non-responsive, or there's major oversights and it can be frustrating to deal with any type of bureaucracy, right?
Sure.
But you get it. If you really thought about it, if you weren't angry at them, you'd get it, because I just mistyped something. Had you not told me, the next 50 episodes would all be the wrong
That's
number.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's how
it's
goes.
It's the way it happens. Nobody's in trouble. It's just the way it is. And I wanted to say a big thank you to you guys for holding it down last week. You guys have seen Transformers Rise of the Beast, right?
Afraid not.
I've seen some of them. I don't know what the...
That's the new one. Well, so it's live.
No, I haven't.
It was like... it was really, honestly, there's a scene between Optimus Prime and Optimus Primal. And that's what it was like. It was like listening to two titans of the game called it down. It was awesome. I don't know who was who, but it was fantastic.
So roll out. Today. Well, Pat was out with Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
With a shitty internet.
Well, I also, big thanks to our brothers in AI, because Pat's been smoothing out his vocals pretty well in post, I think. So good job.
Just like the albums, fellas.
A little auto-tune for the soul.
Yo, let's say thank you to our great benefactors and then get into the hardcore for the hardcore today. Let's go. Thank you and praise to Closed Casket Activities.
Hardcore for the hardcore.
Thank you and praise to Live a Lie.
Grindcore for the grindcore.
Thank you and praise to Run for Cover Records.
I think Indie for the Indie.
Mm. And thank you and praise to Convulse Records.
I'm going to say, you know what? They would not like this distinction necessarily, but I'll say Fastcore for the Fastcore.
Mm. Well, today we're going to start there at Convulse Records, convulserecords.com. Two very new releases that I wanted to highlight. The Flesh Ripper self-titled 7-inch split release with Portrayal of Guilt, who, if you weren't familiar, a band who also is doing their own side label called Portrayal of Guilt. Pretty cool.
Did not know that.
Yeah, very, very cool. This is a Texas band, Flesh Ripper, harsh death metal. What really drew me in, guys? What do you think it was?
Cover.
Yeah, yep. It's got to be an album art.
It's the album art. It's perfect. It's that weird mix where you're like, is this like a thrashy hardcore band? Oh, no, it's death metal. Oh, okay. It's got all the pinings of it. I love it. The logo's got that OG Sepultura look. I think Tom said it reminded me kind of an old, I think it's Confusion logo too.
Yeah.
Who probably were pulling also from the Sepultura logo. You can get it on convulserecords.com exclusive clear vinyl. So go order that. It looks cool. Support this. Support cool labels collabing on stuff like this. So it looks awesome. Love it. Love that shit. The other one I wanted to highlight is The Mall, Time Vehicle Earth. Guys, Patrick referenced The Grove. I hope he, in his, you know, showing off of his homeland, his native home of the 518, that he did get to show his wonderful human wife, The Mall there. Crossgates. Yeah. Yeah. No, she's real. She's a real person. I met her. She was wonderful. Time Vehicle Earth, the band is called The Mall. I love malls. I don't know if I do anymore. I do, but I don't. Cause when you go to a mall now, it feels like
pretty spent.
Yeah, it feels like when you go see your favorite uncle, the dude who was like life of the party, living high, everything's fun, could dunk a basketball, also had the coolest car, you know, but he hit 55 and every part of his body failed, and now he's in the ASL, the assisted living home. Yep. And you don't want to be Uncle Tom anymore. So The Mall, Time Vehicle Earth is not that energy. High energy. It says synth punk, but there's more to it than that, I think. And I will give a deeper musical review of this. But this has been I've been interested in a long time simply because of their name. Much like Flesh Ripper, the art, this band's name pulled me in. So I'm curious to check it out. Everyone should check this out. I'm pretty sure they are... St. Louis? Yes, from St. Louis. So that's kind of cool. Album art's neat. Kind of makes me think of some cosmic shit. Looks like, you know, I don't know, an Earth engine, something wily. So go check it out. Time Vehicle Earth. ConvulseRecords.com.
Good name.
Yo, I'm going to let you guys lead because we're going to Run for Cover Records. RunForCoverRecords.com. Highlighting a brand new release. Do you guys want to talk about this?
Sure. So Narrowhead, they're doing a pre-order for Moments of Clarity. It's coming out in May. It's like a deluxe edition, which I feel like that was such a thing in the early, like late 90s, early aughts.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, hey, we happen to record three more songs, or hey, there's like a DVD with it or something. They're doing...
Tom, we should also, you should mention that there was a whole thing. I don't know if it's still the case. There was a whole thing where Japanese labels
got additional songs.
Yes, right? They would want additional songs. And there was some, I think there was like actually semi-legal reason for it. Somebody's going to have to hit me with that. But there needed to be some distinction. I don't think it was just necessarily an added bonus. But there was often you would have a cover or you would have something that didn't make the cut. So
can we have a brief sidebar here real quick?
Sure.
Please.
Tom, I'm hoping you've seen it. Patrick, I'm also hoping you've seen it. Tom's more likely to have seen it. Have you seen the clip from the barbershop, the shop, show featuring LeBron James where he essentially invents this?
Invents bonus
track, deluxe packaged albums. So this is five dudes talking about sports and life in a barbershop setting from probably 2020, within the last 5 years. And LeBron's like, what if, you're in the studio and you have 16 songs, but the album only needs to be 12 songs. Now, what if it's so good? God, everyone within the sound of my voice, you have to watch it because
he's just like, what if you go to Best Buy and you can get a special edition at Best Buy that only has two songs that no one else has?
Yo, it's so funny because it's like, he's like, it shows everybody who goes out and buys that when it comes out. What if 2 weeks later you go, I want to thank all y'all for being on this ride with me. Here's an extra 4 songs for you. And they can go buy that too.
So good.
LeBron James
deluxe
edition. I think that's. I'm gonna Google that. LeBron James deluxe edition. A bunch of fucking shoes are gonna show up. LeBron James creating the concept of a deluxe album. It's
amazing.
It's amazing because he's
being sincere.
He's doing the scratching his chin kind of thing, like pondering. Oh my God. It's one of my favorite videos. So LeBron hit up Run for Cover and Narrowhead and said, hey guys,
I got this idea.
Yes.
So the record came out last year, 2023. It was on a grip of year end best of album lists. This is a CD, so you can. They have a bunch of vinyl that they're just putting out along with this CD DVD deluxe edition. I listened to, so it was just announced today as we were recording, which is Monday the 8th, I guess.
Yes, sir.
But one of the additional things on the deluxe edition is a cover of "Lovesick" by Crown of Thorns, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
I haven't heard it, but not expected, and
no, it was so out of left
field.
Nice
surprise,
and it's faithful.
That's cool,
but it sounds like Narrowhead, but it's faithful to like the original.
Which I think we should mention, like if you haven't heard Crown of Thorns, and you've heard Narrowhead, and you hear their brand of heaviness with some melody and all that, but you haven't heard Crown of Thorns, you think that doesn't make sense? Crown of Thorns are like the kings of heavy 90s New York hardcore interlaced with a very strong sense of melody. So
absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
So cop that. It ships May 3rd.
Hell yeah. Runforcoverrecords.com. Support the homies. Thank you all. So everybody's feeling good. Tom, how are you doing?
All right.
Patrick, how's the life of a married man?
Oh, it's bliss.
I love it.
The doing nothing for 2 weeks is it's very enjoyable, but there's also a tinge of anxiety where you're like, I should be doing something, right?
You're on your honeymoon.
I know, but I'm sitting here going, money's still a thing, isn't it? Should I figure that out?
You just finished like a 2 month tour. You should have a couple bucks.
A couple bucks for sure. We'll see. Actually, I'm very curious. I'll share with you guys the final tally, but it should have been successful, but. So this is a phenomenon.
How does that work? Like, I've never been in a band of your size.
Stop.
I'm not even boasting. No. I mean, we're not playing with fucking Alkaline Trio.
No.
Do you guys not settle up at the end of like the last night, or is it like you have like an accountant that does it for you?
No, we've there's usually like a 10 days, 2 weeks sort of period where you're still waiting for some monies to come in, and then you're waiting for those to process through the booking agency. For people that don't know, if you wanted to do some type of elaborate, you know, Superman, what is that? Superman 2, whichever Superman it is, whether Office Space, where they're taking fractions of pennies. Mm-hmm. If you ever wanted to do some type of scam like that, an incredible amount of money passes through booking agencies.
Yes.
It is never their money. Not for one second does it belong to the booking agency. However, they hold it. Yes. So if you're into bank fraud, I think they're probably a good target.
There's a really interesting conversation to ask perhaps some of our friends who are involved in that. So how long do you have to hold those large sums of money to make it worth your while in accruing like runoff interest kind of thing, you know?
Good question.
Who to ask, so go for it.
Yeah, there's a couple.
And they take their percentage, right? While they're holding it, right?
On one level of booking shows, you get paid in cash by a guy with a denim vest. And then on another level of shows, you get a check. And then on another level of shows, the money was paid in advance through your booking agency or
wired.
Yes. Or a percentage mm-hmm. of it was a percentage of it. Was.
That's right.
So all of that money, so let's say that, I don't know, it's not every show, but let's say that a number of shows pass through in that way, whatever percentage of that it is. That's all got to get processed. Then we've got to pay everybody off. So sorry, mm-hmm. everybody, if this is fucking boring. I would not blame you if everybody thought this was boring. But you're looking at van rental, a massive merch bill. When I explained to everybody, that's not because we kill it. It's just because merch
is so expensive.
It's expensive, everybody. And
if you sell like 20, you're like, we sold over a week. We sold say 20. I mean, you probably did way more than this, but like $20,000 in merch. That's cool. Cause you probably get like 4,000 out of that.
Right. So this, I at my wedding, the following day, I did a spa day with two of my friends from high school and a booking agent who listens to this podcast who really looked like a shogun in his robe. But so you know how some people have the body for a
sure
robe?
No, the right, yes.
This motherfucker had a body for a robe, but we're talking about money with two friends who have nothing to do with music, but find it endlessly fascinating, and said, how do t-shirts work, for example? Cause they met at my wedding. They met a guy who, sells merch on the ground as a career, in a bus, either overseeing, venue staff or occasionally selling things himself. And they also talked to a guy whose career it is to do the logistics on getting all the bands their merch. So they saw two different levels, and then they also saw my band selling merch. And their question was, how does it work, et cetera, et cetera. And when I walk them through kind of the costs of being in a band, and they were like, well, you're probably going to walk with, they gave X number. And I laughed in their face and said, because, okay. So people that don't understand, your gross in a band is a lot of money.
It can be. Yes. Absolutely. Can be. Yes.
Yes. So let's say that you are in a band that's getting $3,000 guarantee every night and you're selling $3,000 to $5,000 in merch every night. Now, to many of our listeners, that is, oh, wow, that's very successful, right? And to some of our listeners, that is not shit. And everybody, that's the nature of the world, right? Is that it's sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, and you're never as up as some people and never as down as others. And But let's say that's the money that you're making. So let's do a quick back of the envelope sort of thing here. Mm-hmm. I'm bad at math, so I'm going to break out a calculator. Let's say you do 28 shows, right? 28 times, let's round, let's just say that's 6,000 between merch and guarantees. Okay.
Right, so do 30 shows. So it's 180,000.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, very good. Okay. So 30. So what did we arrive at, Tom?
180.
Yeah.
Wait, no, 18,000.
No, can't be 18,000.
30 times.
Oh, I'm sorry. 180,000.
Yeah. Okay. So $180,000 for for 30 days. Now, if you don't know anything about business, and that's this is not to presume I do. I had to learn certain things over years. Everybody, don't feel stupid if you don't know shit. Okay, so 180,000. You go, holy shit! So that means that there's five of you. So you're dividing 180,000 by you're five. Both going home
with, you're getting 36 grand a month,
right? Mm. What you're not considering is that the merch bill might be, I don't know, Bob, help me out.
You know what I mean? Look, if you're making that much, it's, you know, and a typical spread, you're still.
You think it's 60-40 split?
I'll say that you were, if you were smart, here's the problem. If you were smart, if you do everything the right way, you're closing in at 75-25. If you're dumb, you're at 60-40. And okay. And I don't mean that in a shit way.
No,
when
sure.
I say dumb, I say, oh shit, we ran out of X. We need it. Can yep. we get it tomorrow? Yeah, but it's going to cost us. Oh, what about the next day? Oh, here you go. It'll be this. Okay, I guess we got to do that. There's all these things like when you ship merch, sure. it's going to cost you money. Everything costs money, you know? So
much because it's heavy.
Yeah, yep. yeah. So anyways, so yes. So let's go. Let's say on this tour you guys were pretty smart and say it was 70%. You get 70% of whatever breakdown of that was your merch. You get 70% of that, which is to say that you were smart. But that's not including the fact that you probably had someone helping you do it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's, we're not a big band. We don't have like a crazy crew. We've, got a sound guy and a merch person. That's it. No driver, no, you know, there's TM. No, yep. yeah, there's no, no tech. Okay. Both those people need to be paid. And, even if they are our friends, they need to be paid somewhat fairly. So, okay.
And also merch cuts.
So yes. So you're looking at merch cuts and everybody, if you're thinking about
off
what is that?
Gross.
Yes. So what is that? Which by the way, everybody, I learned this because, my wife and I are enjoying, laying around, hotel rooms, ordering, Uber Eats and et cetera. When discounts are applied to your Uber Eats, those do not apply to your tip.
No.
So your tip is based
on the gross.
On the original number prior to whatever discount you're getting. I find that very tricky, by the way, Uber Eats. I don't appreciate that.
I think that's pretty fair because you're not tipping the restaurant, you're tipping the delivery person.
Tipping the delivery person, but I mean, if I'm spending, if it's 80 versus 60 and, listen,
Tom, I mean, you're also that's like a $3 difference.
Listen. All right,
so you're at a restaurant.
We're getting
right?
to it. Pat's broke. He did his tour. He's broke, bro.
Exactly.
Merch.
So everybody, sorry to bore you, but basically what it is, after you then get to, let's say that you rented a vehicle, let's say that you get two hotel rooms. Is that reasonable? Three hotel rooms is.
I mean, you're adults. You got like
two,
seven.
Two seems fine. Let's just say two. You're breaking balls and doing two.
Yes. So everybody's on. So that's very uncomfortable. And it is grown men at this point in my band, mm-hmm. but we're not above it. That's for fucking sure. So, mm-hmm. What is that? Another 170 per hotel room? Because like you don't want to park someplace where you're going to get robbed. Basically what I'm trying to say is everybody, that $180,000, that seems like a large number. It is a business. So it's not actually a large number. It's that's the gross, everybody. And then it gets chipped away until there's very little remaining. I will let you fellas know, by the way, those numbers are very
made up.
Yeah, completely made up. And I will let you two know behind the scenes how that actually panned out. And maybe we could talk about it.
And booking agents get what, 10 or 15?
I don't even know. What is 10? And then you've got manager.
Yep.
And
another yeah.
Which is another percentage. Typically, our agreement with our managers is a little irregular, but it's still something.
Yep.
You know, everybody. Here's what I'm trying to say: is GoFundMe and link in bio.
Yeah, yeah. Was this what you wanted to talk about?
Here's what I wanted to talk about.
This, by the way, everyone, this is one of those rare ones. Pat hit us and said, "I got some topics. I got some surprise topics." And we said, let's go. So let's
go. Okay. We take no responsibility for whatever Pat's about to say.
I'm going to start with something that's not timely. There's a timely one. Everybody stick around for that. Not timely.
Did you see the eclipse?
Bad mix of genres.
Okay.
Okay. I was with two friends who do not know each other. They both have played music with me. And both would like to again. They said, why don't we just play together? You know what I mean? I do this instrument, you do that instrument. Mm. Patrick, you want to sing? I said, I'd love to sing. Anything you guys do. They said, okay, what do you want to play? And I said, here's an idea. 20-minute hardcore songs. And they were like, yo, that's the worst idea anybody's ever fucking had.
Yes, that's right.
I was like, no. Think about it. They're hardcore songs. But they're 20 minutes. And they're like, no, we caught it. It was fucking stupid. No, I got the first
time. You can repeat it as many times as you want.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, good. Is this the part where we ground you and go, yeah, bad idea or what? What are we talking about here?
No.
You
just
do one song. Is this the decline for hardcore?
It's the decline for hardcore. That's exactly the idea. But here's what I wanted to bring up. I think of genres and I think of how limiting and stupid they are. When you step outside of them or look at genres you don't care about. Today on Twitter, people were discussing, you know, black metal, and it's like National Socialist black metal and all this bullshit truly, everybody, black metal is an embarrassing pile of shit. I don't care about any of this. It's just stupid music. Like, and I'm trying to engage with these conversations about this genre that I don't care about. Like, I've heard black metal that I think is interesting, but mostly just because I admire how self-starting and DIY it is, right? So that's the only part of it that interests me. I don't actually, the music is fucking trash, but let's think about this genre. And because I don't care about that genre at all, I don't care about its integrity at all. All I'm thinking is, you know, there's elements of this that, you know, maybe there's crossover with something that I mostly enjoy, like Godflesh. You know what I mean? Like maybe there's elements where you could pull it in one shape or another.
Sure.
where I would like it.
Right.
And then I started thinking about how those efforts are typically abject failures to people who love a genre. And to people who do care, whether it's kind of in the abstract or they think about it, it doesn't matter. On some level, they care about the integrity of the shape of the thing that they enjoy, right? Okay. Like they don't want it to blow out. And I was thinking about asking you fellas, what is some genres that people try? And we don't have to be personal because we understand we're talking about friends sometimes. Mm-hmm. That people try that does not, we don't have to say fucking sucks. Let's just say never works for you. So what are some bad mixes of genres?
Oh, this is an interesting one. So pulling back while I filibuster to give us both time to think of our actual answers, this is what creates also interesting things, right? Like,
yes,
things that transcend genre and go, oh, okay, well, that's interesting what they did with that. So I don't want to discourage it, but the heart of what you're asking is great, because you're saying, look, there's people who are genre purists and they might never want the thing that blends two things. Even if it's two things they like, they might not ever want that. I know plenty of people who like hardcore and death metal, and you know, I could see them not wanting those twain to meet, or at least not in certain realms. And that's one I'll give an example of, is that death metal, not something I love, but like, you know, Top of the Pops, you know, I can appreciate some of it. Hardcore, obviously I love it, but deathcore was and has never been for me. That said, there's a lot of people who are bringing a hell of a lot of elements of death metal into hardcore, not say in the way that deathcore did specifically, but in a myriad of different ways. And I'll be honest, I guarantee some people who are making these things that I'm going, oh, that's actually kind of cool. Like, I like what they're doing with that. Didn't come in from purist hardcore or purist metal. They came in through deathcore.
Yeah, many.
The thing I didn't like, the thing I don't like, but are now doing a version of a thing that I like with something else that I can appreciate and like making it make sense to me. And I would have said the same thing about pop punk and hardcore. Very, very common genre blending by this point. You know, like, look, it's 2000. Would it have been heresy to say, yeah, Civ is like pop punk meets hardcore, you know? Because in 1989, there were people saying that about Start Today, you know?
Sure.
Like, so, as we get further away from the thing, it's like, no, not so much. But I think over the last 20 plus ish years, pop punk and hardcore has become a thing that's been blended, sometimes unsuccessfully, but when it works, you know, it's pretty good. To the point where I think it's now become like a whole, it's, you know, essentially when we talk about hardcore adjacent, a lot of that stuff is essentially like hardcore elements, pop punk elements, some alt elements, and there you go.
Well, Tom, I would like to hear your answer, but
I don't know if I have one. I'm trying to
but
a mixture of genres that aren't.
So I'll say this. What about when they get it wrong? Not sonically, but I mean the estimation of a thing. So for example, when I was a kid, Fugazi was often described as hardcore meets indie.
Right.
But that is not accurate at all.
No.
You know what I mean? No. Like, there, you know, and it's easy to be dismissive and say the people that draw these comparisons have only heard one hardcore band and one indie band.
you know what's an interesting thing, Patrick, because that's a great one. What if I said that Fugazi, it's not hardcore mixed with indie, but it was hardcore meets college rock? You know what I mean? 80s definition, college rock.
Let me tell you what the difference is.
Yeah. Would you agree to that more?
More, and I would still stop you. Here's why. I would say, to my ear, Fugazi dissolves all remnants of hardcore in their sound after the first two records.
I wouldn't argue with that. That's a great point. Yeah.
So what you're left with is college rock played by musicians who really learned how to play music playing hardcore. Yep. And we could say that for so much college rock, but it's never more apparent than on a Fugazi record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yep. So that's what I would say is the difference. Cause you're not technically wrong, but I also think that that's, it's not the most precise summary.
No, so, because exactly. I wouldn't reduce it to that, but that's, I always, you know, like Fugazi has very few, like sonically, if you had to push them in a group with something that they're not grouped with, because they're kind of not grouped with anything other than broadly discord, I find them closer to AMRAP stuff, you know,
I would say its closest cousin is maybe Husker Du. You know what I mean? Like that's its closest
right.
cousin.
Some man, but the Husker Du. Yeah, you know, structurally, song structure wise, Husker Du is doing so. When Husker Du is doing punk music, hardcore music, their structures are so much more traditional. And then when they move out of it, that's where you could, I could say, you know, like Zen Arcade, you could start to say that.
Yeah. So you go from Zen Arcade to the song Five Corporations and you can go, okay. All right.
I can feel with that. I think there's just, they're coming at melody in such different ways. And if I'm being honest, Fugazi's difficulty in getting to melodies is part of what makes their music interesting.
I agree with that.
Whereas Husker Du's,
I mean, that comes a little more naturally.
Exactly. It has a more natural inclination to it, but attempts to take a harder road, despite they always, it almost feels like they had the tune in their head, like, do, 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 do. Okay, how do we get there? Whereas Fugazi was always searching how to make it to something like that. So, but I agree.
So let's bring it back to Scar. Pardon me, not Scarhead.
It always comes back to Scarhead.
No. Give me something. For example, I very, very rarely think that hip hop and hardcore work. However, I am a pretty big advocate for that Gridiron LP. So obviously, it works sometimes. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, but let me put it like this, so that you guys don't feel put on the spot shitting on any, like something specific. What is something that when you hear it described, you wince? You go, oh no, don't do that, baby. No. Cause I'll give you another one. On a recent, on my trip to Vegas, which was from hell, because getting there was so difficult.
Yeah.
Somebody I was in a van with said, "Hey, I've never liked Harm's Way, but Harm's Way is without question the best sounding hardcore band in North America."
Fascinating. Okay.
Because, listen, I don't doubt that. I haven't seen Harm's Way in a small room in a while. Last time I played with them, it was a festival. They did sound good for a festival, but it was, you know, you're playing to the sky, you know what I mean? So it's hard to sound perfect, but this person's point was, I had no expectations, never been a fan, and they sounded precise and massive. And I ruminated on that because I said, everything about that makes sense. It's real musicians who are very dedicated to this thing, that this sound that they've been kind of pushing towards on each record, right?
Right, and who are also looking at kind of a studio clarity and conciseness.
Yes.
That hits the sound. Yeah, sure.
Yes. So with that in mind, I thought, you know, listen. I think Isolation's a good record. There's Harm's Way stuff that I like. I really like that middle kind of like when they left kind of the like there was no trace of Weekend Nacho's sort of DNA anymore, and it was like heavy. You know what I mean? That was kind of the era that I enjoyed most. But they've been pushing towards this borrowing from industrial sounds, right?
Right.
In a distinctly different way than, for example, Code Orange. Code Orange has to incorporate kind of like the spastic elements of electronic music, right?
Yep.
Whereas Harm's Way is going for more like I mean, I don't know if they'd say this or not. I haven't read enough Harm's Way interviews, but it's like, it's got like a Wax Trax sort of in like Chicago industrial thing, right? And, that when you tell me it's hardcore meets industrial, I fucking barf. Like if you said, yeah, Houseplant has a new record out, and I go, Houseplant, I go, you know, I'm one third of a hardcore podcast. I don't know Houseplant. What the fuck's Houseplant?
Yeah.
and I say, what's it sound like? and you go, I would say it's hardcore. And I go, and you go, heavy hardcore. And I go, okay. Meets industrial. And I go, oh shit. You just no sold. And I'm never clicking. I'm not clicking. I forget pay money for something. I'm not clicking. Now, that said, Harm's Way's last couple records weren't my thing, but they satisfy a certain itch for a lot of people, and they're good at it. So like, what I'm saying is, what is that revulsion to? And then you can give an example of where it works, like Gridiron. Gridiron works. You know what I mean? Harm's Way works. But what is? What is
so far electronic hardcore has not worked for me. Okay. I would say the same thing. I mean, industrial music is not something I have found myself going to. I actually talked about this with Code Orange because structurally song structures by nature, industrial song structures are supposed to be short on transitions, high on impact, short on transitions. They're severe. There's not a flow to it I don't always love. Electronic hardcore, look, I'm not opposed to it. I don't think anybody's nailed it yet. And when it was kind of, burgeoning in various little pockets, I don't think there's been ever like, oh, this is just electronic hardcore. But like whenever it's been tried, it hasn't hit for me at all. Tom, how about you? Anything? Has it ever hit for you?
Electronic hardcore?
Yeah. Like programming.
So we're being clumsy with it because there's an actual genre of electronic hardcore. Like
Atari Teenage Riot or some shit.
Right. Which does not have anything to do with the hardcore that we
right.
like.
So sloppily, just industrial influenced. Or
like
way.
Dance beats, any kind of like programmed dance beats into hardcore.
I'll just say, get that shit the fuck away from me. Like, I can shoot Bale to Harm's Way because I think they're very good at this thing that they
do. Correct. That's why it's like the next thing over, and it's like
But once you say dance beats, I go, yeah, get the fuck.
That's right.
I'm not playing this game now.
But now here's the thing, and it's like, yo, what if you go through the evolution of that kind of shit? Like Gang of Four, a lot of post-punk, a lot of new wave.
Dance. It's got some dance elements.
And yo, I can see that phased into plenty of punk, hardcore, etc. And it can work. So far, nobody's nailed the electronic version of this. Nobody's brought in the electronic dance beats and unst its way into a hardcore track that's working.
I'm going to give Tom the opportunity to defend his favorite genre. Go ahead, Tom.
My favorite genre. I fuck with some of the more industrial elements of Code Orange.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
I feel like Vane has that too.
Oh, yeah. Here's my estimation.
Well, again, like you said, like if you were like, yo, you want to check out this industrial hardcore band, I'm like, nah, pass.
Yeah.
But then you hear it in practice, and when it's done well, it's done very well. I had one that I totally forgot what fuck. I mean, it's more of a current thing, more like, but the like new metal leaning hardcore.
Oh, sure.
So do we think, let's just pop open Pandora's box, Tom. Do we think someone's going to do it and make it work for our old asses?
No.
it's someone pushing up a very large rock up a very steep hill.
Because it's one of those things, it's like, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like, I never liked nu metal.
Yeah, no.
So I have no, like, not even like I'm too cool for school, but I was old.
Yo, I got to say this. I was getting into punk and hardcore at the time, at the exact moment when nu metal was hitting.
Yeah, and that was the end. Listen, everybody, that was the enemy. If you were if you're of a certain age, that's the other kid. It doesn't.
We're not even trying to be mean because we can look at it with a lens now. You know what I mean?
Right. Just but was, I don't have. I never the learned other. Any affinity for it because it was never.
Hello out there.
Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz,
and I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Minahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to Nothing But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
It was never a thing. Like, it didn't get me into anything. Like, Biohazard was, like, the closest to nu metal thing that got me into other stuff. You know what I mean?
And Biohazard you got into, any derogatory thing I could say, it's not the nu metal we're talking about here.
No.
And I would say Sepultura roots is how I got into Sepultura. So that counts, right?
That's
so
pretty new. That's new.
Very new. There's some heavy
Corn record, and then they were like, you know what?
100%. And there's some very heavy songs on that record, but yeah. and some really straightforward heavy songs. But yeah, it's fucking new.
But you know what? Like in the nu metal canon, that's 96. You know what I mean? That's like early-ish on that whole wave of things. Like, are there things that are before that? Sure, but like, let's look at this. This is actually here. We're going nu metal corner for everybody. All right. Korn. When does the first, so Korn starts in 93, but when does the record that hits? So Life is Peachy is 96. The self-titled Korn record 94. Is 94. Yes. So yes, those two,
that's the atomic bomb. Correct. of changing the music landscape where yes. bands said, oh, we got to have some element of this. Correct. Sepultura, sorry, everybody, I'm not a Sepultura expert of any type. I just like a few of their records. They are a fascinating band in the respect that they changed genres three times. and they just kept it churning along going, oh yeah, no. We've been meaning to do this. And you're like, really? You've been meaning to go like, and they're like, oh yeah, we're good at it though, right? And you're like, yeah, I guess you are. It's kind of impressive.
Like insane musician. Yeah.
So, but
I mean, also Korn did, they did a US tour with Orange and 9mm and Sick of It All. Yep.
Yeah. I think we've discussed this, but it's always worth repeating. A band that we all celebrate, 108, dropped from that tour, and that band from Bakersfield took their place.
That I did not know.
Yeah. That's why. Supposed to be 108. Guys, we could be up. We could be talking about the impact that Rob Fish had on music, modern music. Wah! Bum, ba, ba, da, ba, ba. You know?
Yeah, that would have been a fucking tour. 108, Orange 9, and fucking Sick of It All?
Yep.
In 1995? Are you kidding?
You guys are moshing so much.
No, I would have been moshing for three bands.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Tom, that's a fantastic pick. I think there's a lot of people trying to do it. Isn't connecting for me because some of it's ingrained. What are let's peel off our bias. What would someone need to focus on from the nu metal thing to make it work? Like, would nu metal style breakdowns, like Twizy breakdowns, work? Is it the like groove? Could we pivot it to groove metal meets hardcore? Like what could make it work? Anything? Because I'm struggling. It's not my world.
I mean, if we're considering Deftones nu metal, sound like Chino.
Okay.
I mean, that's sound like that dude, or like, I mean, Faith No More is really the fucking forefathers of nu metal.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
I mean, all those bands looked, I mean, and he rapped and all that kind of shit. But, like, yep. You know, ultimately they were like punk and metal dudes that just happened to do something weird. I mean, I think the best things of nu metal have already been plumbed. Like, it's like the slow mosh parts that are somewhat like, that were somewhat nu metal-y.
Sure.
And I feel like everything, and this might be crazy and this might be my age talking, but I feel like everything nu metal has been like filtered through disembodied, and everyone just sounds like disembodied.
Yeah, that's a crazy, crazy phenomenon that we've discussed at some length.
They weren't a nu metal band, but like
they had somehow. More. They were not. However,
we were too early for that.
They were, but they had more elements than the average.
There's some parallels
than the average Ferret band, than the average Trustkill band. They had more elements. But okay. So I'm going to embarrass myself by looking senile. I was just trying to search. There is a hardcore band that had a little bit of buzz 2 years ago, that I haven't heard from since. And now I cannot remember their name.
Where are they from?
I don't recall their name. So Division of Mind is not the band I'm thinking of. However, they have a similar name. And
yes, they're from San Diego.
I'm struggling right now.
No, they're from San Diego.
Oh, I can picture the artwork.
Yep.
I'm struggling.
Wow. This is the oldest.
Absence of Mind?
Maybe Absence of Mind.
I think you're right, Tom.
Of Mind.
Absence of Mind. Bandcamp. Let's see. Absence of Mind. As in possessive.
Right, Mind.
Yep.
Okay, so
People were mad at them.
Were they? God, listen.
When that record came out, everyone was like, fuck this band.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, now, okay. So I was sitting with somebody who hated this, had really strong feelings on this at the time it came out. And I remember thinking, it's going for something. In the same way, sorry, everybody, I'm really experiencing one today. Tom, could you help me out? Hudson Valley Band that is borrowing from Only Living Witness, maybe a little. Age of Apocalypse. Thank you very much. So everybody, you got to parse these things, because every time somebody in hardcore brings in certain elements, it kicks off the internet in this bizarre way. Twitching Tongues did this for a lot of people when Twitching Tongues debuted. Age of Apocalypse, it can be divisive in that way. There's a certain influence, and it is typically Only Living Witness, that for whatever reason, even though most kids, if they listened to Only Living Witness, would think it was fucking awesome. They would be like, whoa, my mind blown by this. It's so heavy. And yet, you know what I mean? But they weirdly, their first instinct is to push back against it. Now, Absence of Mind, forgive me, Absence of Mind, I do not recall note for note your record, but I thought it brought in some of those elements along with kind of what you and I would call more new influences. Does that seem like, does that correspond with your memory or no?
I believe so.
Okay.
I can't say I listen to this record very often.
No, but I definitely did listen to it when it came out. And I remember thinking, oh, they're going for a thing. And I respect that. But my point here is, yes, nu metal influences do not interest me at all, but I am kind of at a stage where I recognize that is so much in the water as alternative guitar music that even though it is at least 10 years older than many of the kids incorporating those sounds, that's the point, is that it had filtered down a decade's worth of, oh, it's everywhere, and is unavoidable.
Radio everywhere.
Right. So it is unavoidable. And in that respect, I find it totally interesting that we would be getting some of that. Now,
I mean, let's be realistic. People were acting like that Limp Bizkit was cool last year.
Oh, yeah. That was a weird moment.
Remember that when everyone was like, yo, man?
Very, very odd moment. Yes.
And I was like, and I wonder, being like, is everyone just playing nice?
I mean, listen, I'm
rooting for the bands that are opening for them. I have no beef with the bands that are opening for them.
I like the song and the music video for Gold Cobra. You could put that in the history books.
I don't even know what that is.
Do you guys know about the movie that Fred Durst made?
Oh, yeah.
Fanatic? Yeah, I do.
Come on.
Tom, please give us an elevator pitch of The Fanatic.
It's the meanest movie I've ever seen.
So people can understand. I believe, was it directed by? Was it?
Oh, yeah, written and directed by Fred Durst.
Yeah, from
starring John Travolta.
It's gotta hold on. I gotta see the budget.
So, I mean, it made like the equivalent of like $20 a theater.
It made $3,153 in the box office.
Right. Look how many. I forget how many theaters it was in, but it was like, oh, cool. They made $27 per theater. Like
52 theaters in the U.S. Yeah.
Right. So, what is that?
3153 divided by 52. Let's do the math. Calculator, don't fail me now.
31
bucks divided by 52. $60.63. That's right.
That means they sold, depending on where, say, an average of 6 tickets per theater for the weekend. So, the whole thing is John Travolta plays a character who's definitely like he's developmentally delayed.
Yes.
And he's obsessed with Devon Sawa, who plays an actor really going out, showing his range, plays an actor in this movie.
Yes.
And he ends up like stalking him. And then it has like some like misery elements to it.
Yes.
But it's literally like it's Devon Sawa is so unbelievably mean to this character, and like it's so clear that this person is not healthy and not well.
So John Travolta in playing this character must have just watched Dumb and Dumber and said, "Yes, I need to look like one of those guys for this film."
I mean, the ending's fucking terribly sad. It's not meant to be.
Yeah.
But also you have to watch it. Literally the first spoken line in the movie is John Travolta walks into like this, like, I think it's like a comic book store. He's like, can't talk, got a crap. or they got a poo or something like that. First line. And there's a part where Devon Sawa is driving around with his kid in the car. And he's like, you want to listen to some music? And he puts on Limp Bizkit.
Right. Okay, I remember this. So
it's worth watching because it's like unbelievably terrible. And like, it's like, yo, John Travolta, man, you were in like Pulp Fiction.
I mean,
he's got more misses than hits, but like, it's an unbelievably bad movie and it's unbelievably mean-spirited in 2018. Like, I watched, just to go on a movie aside, have you guys ever seen The Night of the Scarecrow?
No.
So this is insane. I watched this. My father let me watch this as a fucking kid, which like I watched it recently. It's on Shudder. And I was like, dude, this came out in like 1981. And it was a TV movie, horror movie.
Right.
That was on like CBS or something. And this guy, Larry Drake, this actor, Larry Drake, who played like Darkman. And he was like,
I love him.
He played the developmentally disabled guy that worked on like LA Law.
Okay.
So he plays another, I mean, he's not developmentally disabled, plays another character like that. Who ends up, he's in a small town down in the 70s. His best friend is this little girl. Charles Durning plays the head mailman, who's also like a vigilante.
Okay.
And the girl gets attacked by a dog. Larry's character saves her. But everyone thinks that, you know, of course he did it. So his mother hides him in a scarecrow.
God, what?
And they kill him.
Wow.
They kill him. Like, and it's on YouTube. So if anybody wants like a fucked up scare. But then the rest of the movie is like all the guys, the 6 vigilantes or whatever that kill him all end up dying.
Sure.
Because he's like, he's haunting the cornfields and stuff.
Obviously. Come on.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's actually like for a TV movie, it's actually quite good. Mm. I don't know why I went. Because they in 1981 treated somebody better with a developmental, like intellectual disabilities,
sure,
better than Fred Durst treated the same type of person in 2019.
Sure,
That's what I meant to say. And I apologize if that's not the correct terminology. I think it's intellectually disabled.
You don't need to worry. There's like 4 words. There are 4 phrases. Developmental delay, developmental disability, but then that doesn't encompass that doesn't encompass people who have TBIs. So like, whatever. You can't really go too wrong.
But yeah, the fact that, like, dude, everyone, let's double his fucking the $3,000. Let's get Fred Durst up to $6,000. Watch this movie. I'm sure it's on something for free.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a Tubi hit. Let's go.
It definitely is. We'll do a watch along.
Oh yeah. There
we go. Fuck. On Patreon if you want.
All right, God, I'll do
damn.
It.
Damn. We're committing here. So I think that's a good one. For all the good that genre blending has made, there's still some places that
but wait.
Get us uncomfortable.
I'm going to cut you off.
Go.
We're playing it way too safe right now. Like, nobody in our listenership expects us to like a drop of nu metal.
Sure. Right.
And nobody in our listenership thinks that we're committed to the industrial scene.
All right, here's one.
Yes, please. Give me something like, hey, I don't like fastcore in my X. Right. You know what I mean?
Well, here's a genre that's its own genre, but is a mixture of like two different pieces of hardcore.
Okay. Yes. Hit me.
Youth Crew.
Never been a fan. Go on.
I think when it's done well, it's awesome. But when it's not, it is bad.
Okay. So
you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that, cause that's like, it meets like it's standard hardcore and straight edge.
Yes. Here's my question. Do you think that if you give it a name that like as its own genre title, like let's say for example, nu metal meets hardcore, we just developed a name for it. We just said, you know what I mean? That's Plant Riz. And yeah. people were like Plant Riz. You could say I like it or I don't.
So Plant Riz is when you mix 90s vegan metalcore with nu metal.
Plant That's Riz. Right.
Plant Riz.
So here's what I'm saying.
So do, it's
we
Sliver.
Listen, there's a couple kids out here who.
Oh yes, there are.
Ride for Slither.
Oh, they ride for Slither. Yeah. So, but it's coded. So, but follow me. Do you? Okay. Youth Crew. Do we think Youth Crew dodges some of that by virtue of having its own name? And do we think that is it a more organic mutt genre because it is hardcore on hardcore, and therefore, or does that push people, certain people? Well, okay. Like bands like Full of Hell, right? Like that's metalcore meets noise.
Sure.
And that can either pull in listeners from both genres, mm-hmm. or that can repel purists. Right. Sure. And those are still pretty desperate genres. When it's closer, when it is, you know, let's say fastcore meets mosh, and somebody would go, "Oh, like Power Violence," you know what I mean? And you're like,
"Yeah."
So my question, I guess, is when Species, and everybody forgive me, it's been a long time since I've read a book. You know when species are too far afield from each other to reproduce, so like or to reproduce offspring, yes. that can then reproduce. So a mule, as I understand it, is what, like the son of a donkey and a horse. Is that correct?
That's right.
But the mule is unable to reproduce.
That's right.
So okay.
Genetic dead end. Yes.
So,
I didn't know you guys were all genealogists.
Yeah. Listen,
side gig. When you dwelled so deep in the humanities, you got to get a partial science degree as well.
Got it. Get you're like, yeah, you can't cross a fucking.
So
if we didn't know, we'd be in a lot more trouble. There'd be a lot of bad things happening out here.
Sure. So if you told me that somebody they've got a dog and a cat that live together, and when the couple goes to bed, the dog and the cat attempt to have sex. I would not be shocked to learn that, right? I'd say, oh, interesting. I'd
be a little surprised, to be honest.
But
like, I mean, shock may be strong, but I you know, like they wait for the humans to go to sleep.
Yeah, they wait for the humans to go to sleep.
They know well enough to be like,
it's a sneaky little thing.
Sneaky.
So my point is,
I'll fly. Dog's like, I'll fly if it's sneaky.
They're unable to reproduce. But then you could have a Chihuahua and a Mastiff who technically could reproduce. So what I'm saying here is disparate hardcore genres coming together to produce mastiff chihuahuas. Is that easier on us than the non-viable dog and cat having sex? Is this metaphor getting a little stranger?
No. He's saying, is it harder for us to see the hardcore on hardcore mixed genre versus the hardcore meets external genre? I think you're onto something, because with say like specifically youth crew, I think, Tom, I'd love for you to tell me more about what two genres you think are colliding there. Cause you're not wrong when like the quote unquote youth crew stuff, because like everybody knows, like you can go real like biblical and be like, well, actually the youth crew is only the, no. We know what you're talking about.
That's yeah.
Tight fades, cargo shorts, hoodies, right. X's, t-shirts over sweatshirts, the whole thing.
Right.
When that is, to me, that is squarely DC meets New York with a sprinkling of Southern California / 7 Seconds uniform choice. I know 7 Seconds is Reno. You throw in the blender and there you go. But when you start to lose some of that, slows down too much, can kind of go bad. If you're asking me, really the worst part for me for youth crew is part of the genre defining characteristics is like some of the lyrical stylings and
the cosplay.
When the lyrics go bad and the hoodie's still crisp, it can be really, really rough. So because I don't disagree. I think that's actually a good point, but I think that's like, maybe I'd say when it's done well, it can be really good. Example being something like Youth of Today. People, you know, Pat might argue, no, I don't ride with almost any of it, because you kind of don't.
I kind of don't. And
Gorilla Biscuits, but like honestly, Gorilla Biscuits sonically.
And I think
so much different,
but like, I think,
do you fuck with like Wide Awake?
No, not really. We could
give him the best 10 songs and he could respect it.
I can make excuses for the best of the genre, but I think so to my ear, Bob nailed it. I would call Youth Crew, NYHC by way of Orange County. And I think that to my ear, that's exactly, not it for me. You know what I mean? Like it's like, okay, that's not it for me. I don't want that. But I'm saying that obviously Youth Crew is, well, there's people that don't like it. It is, not codified is not the word I'm looking for. It is enshrined.
Canonized.
It's canonized. Thank you. It's a recognized subgenre of hardcore that people can like or dislike, but nobody would argue is a valid expression of the form. Whereas there's people our age who are going to be new metal hardcore for another 5 years until that's just a thing that we all accept.
That's the part, and I'd advance it too, because I think there's a lot of it. When you go to the hardcore on hardcore example, I think that some of the early 90s sound stuff where it is pulling in just a little bit of metal influences and a lot of the 80s stuff, but saying, hey, we think we don't want to go faster than this, so let's slow it down. But they haven't gone full metal. Like they haven't hit that point. Like that new age stuff. Look, I think when that's done poorly, like the dregs of that stuff, there's that's some really bad. You know what I mean? That's like the extended, terrible. Like I think Tom was not wrong. That's like, Man, and by the way, I'd be remiss to say that the Youth Crew sound definitely has some of the Boston stuff in there. SSD is definitely in the formula too. Sorry.
Sure.
So, this is, to me, the way it looks is in 86, 87, you get that first wave of like the Youth Crew stuff. Then you get the like national explosion of it, where you get, you know, every town has their Unit Pride, their Step Forward, their, you know, Billingsgate, etc. 89, you see a continuation of that, and maybe they've stepped down a bit, or they've started to pull in some of the metal stuff because Judge hits, and all of a sudden you have bands writing leads with straight edge bands. And then you get the fourth wave is when you hit into where it stops being like quote unquote Youth Crew-ish and starts being 90s core. And that's where I think you get the new age era starts to be in. So, you know, there's something about the Mule comparison there. We might need to do an entire Patreon episode where we unpack that that analogy. But no, I mean, look, I want to bend it. I'm going to take this, and I want to think about it for a future episode. I think all three of us have spots where we don't like subgenre of hardcore punk metal, whatever. It's just not for us. You know, obviously we talked about new metal, not for any of the three of us, but the Top of the Pops, almost everything, almost all this stuff. If you give me the very best of the best, I can at least appreciate the greatness or at least like some of it, you know?
Yes.
And there's certain ones where it's harder. And then there's certain ones where it's like, yo, you know what? I don't love, you know, I don't love peace punk, but for some reason, this band who isn't considered the best, but has this more, you know, is more noisy and grimy. I like this because it reminds me of the crust punk stuff that I like, you know, like there's, so the question from me is to you guys, what subgenres, even the Top of the Pops, you're like, doesn't do it for me. Patrick, obviously Youth Crew is kind of there for you.
Yeah, it's nearly there. Like I'll take, nobody considers me like a fastcore aficionado, and I'll take stuff that falls into that lane before I would take Youth Crew. Grind is not easy for me. Grind is something that I'll dip a literal toe, a pinky toe into. And although I was thinking, you want to make it a little bit of homework to revisit the Insect Warfare material that I haven't revisited in 20 years.
Sure.
you want to try?
I think I'm going to call it sick that day.
Yo, I stumbled into Insect Warfare not within the last 3 years.
Oh, interesting.
And was
I haven't
like,
20 years for me. I don't think I've
was kind of like, oh, okay. Like I wasn't, it wasn't, it didn't make my, my regular rotation, but I was cool with it. I liked it. You know, I was kind of like,
oh, yeah, I may not be mad at all. I don't know.
No. I mean, so Grind is a tough one. I think Grind
that long ago. Why is Pat acting? I like to,
Grind to me is the ultimate. I think I like this better when it's mixed in a dish. You know, so I don't know what that is. For example, I'm rarely eating mushrooms on their own, but if you put them in ramen or pho or any number of dishes, I'm like, oh yeah, this is good. This adds to it, you know? So Grind almost is a good pairing, partner, you know, like that there you're getting reproductive offspring from this one.
Yo, how stupid am I? I just looked up Insect Warfare and it took me to Entomological Warfare. It, how dumb am I? It did not occur to me that, of course, Insect Warfare is a real thing. You know what I mean? Of course, like you could make everybody in a city sick in weeks if you just gave them poison fleas.
Oh,
you know
what I mean? Right.
So of course, I'm a very stupid man, but,
remember they did that in Ocean's 12?
I didn't. Do they do that?
Oh, they do 12? Do that in Ocean's 12.
They do. They give the guy bed bugs, like the guy that's like reviewing. Is it 12 or 13? Whatever the one that Al Pacino's in.
That's 13 when they go back to Vegas. Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, I thought this was like a joke band. It's not a joke band. It's like a real band.
Insect
Warfare? Oh, no. Insect Warfare took themselves really seriously, to my memory. I don't – listen, it's been a long time.
You also said they were around from 2004 to 2008. I thought they were like – some like weird 80s band that I never
No. Bob, do you recall when this was popping? Do you recall that?
I do.
Okay. So everybody
was a couple steps beyond the Mammoth Grinder stuff, in my opinion. And that I always felt more like in that hierarchy, Hatred Surge, then you keep going grindy and you get to Mammoth Grinder and then you get over to something like Insect Warfare. And it's not to say Mammoth Grinder is grind, but it was just moving in that direction.
Yeah, my memory, everybody, if you're an Insect Warfare fucking purist, forgive me here. I'm just my memory of Insect Warfare was that it was for the purists. That's how they advertise themselves.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And listen, I'm not enough of a grind aficionado to say if they achieve that, but. I'm a nasty pose. I'm a bit of a pose on the Insect Warfare. But you know what? I'm going to revisit at least the LP. I think they've got one LP and I'm going to give it a shot.
Are you doing that for homework or are you just doing it?
No.
He's going to wait till his wife leaves for the country. Then he can dig into Insect Warfare.
That's right. And
maybe play it tonight for her last night in town.
Yeah, she'll love that. And so I'm going to revisit World Extermination.
Yeah, I think that's for people, one.
For people who don't know, you know it. You don't know the music maybe, but you know it because it has the coolest art that ever existed. And in your mind you go, oh, right. I've seen that. I probably picked it up, saw that there was 20 tracks on it and said, I'm not sure.
This artwork's pretty sick.
It's fantastic. And, we'll see. I mean, you know, maybe I love this. I don't know. We'll find out together.
They have a song that has 1.3 million listens.
Probably doing better than me.
crazy.
Salute to Insect Warfare for this week. We'll find out if I feel that way next week.
All right, we'll do some homework. I'm open to it. I was only busting balls. All right, here we go. And you had a second thing.
I did, and it's timely, but it's way too big a topic. Way too big.
Let's make it timely for next week.
It will still be timely. I'm confident of it.
Don't look at the sun, everybody.
Or do.
It's fine. The eclipse passed. You can look at the sun all you want. Bye.
We got an earthquake.